You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
While this trip to Fight Island for the UFC has produced a lot of outstanding moments, I think it's fair to say that a lot of people had these final two cards of this trip highlighted on their schedules. Of course, UFC 254 goes down next weekend, but tomorrow night it is UFC Fight Island 6 in Abu Dhabi, and it looks on paper to be an absolutely perfect lead-in to that pay-per-view card, especially when you look at this fascinating featherweight main event between Brian Ortega and the Korean Zombie. As we wish you a happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to the UFC Fight Island 6 preview show for MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck, and the full tripod is here once again as I'm being joined by Jose Youngs, who is in Abu Dhabi, and Alex K. Lee, the Prince of Positivity. And Jose, the fight that you have been looking forward to for years, the fight that you believed would never happen, is nearly here. Brian Ortega versus the Korean Zombie. And I get it, Jose. It's 2020. You've talked about this on many a preview show, that the rule of thumb in 2020 is until these fighters get inside the octagon, nothing is official. But can we invoke some sort of positivity here for Pete's sakes? And either way, at least paint us a word picture as to why this fight has been atop of your anticipated fight list for years now.
Are we sure Brian Ortega weighed in? I don't think I saw Brian Ortega weigh in. I saw a shaved man, a bald-headed shaved man weigh in. That's not the Brian Ortega I know. To be fair, he did shave his head, so he's no longer the long-locked Chicano fighter that we've all come to enjoy watching. He's now a bald-headed man with insane fighting skills. He did say he was going to donate to Locks of Love, so good on him. But to answer your question, I feel a little bit of positivity considering they both weighed in. They did their job. But we've seen people fall out that have weighed in. We've seen people fall out that have stared down. We've seen people fall out that got their hands wrapped. So this fight isn't happening until they're inside the octagon, as far as I'm concerned. But to put into perspective why I'm so excited about this fight, I don't think either one has ever been in a bad fight. Even when they lose, it's an unbelievable fight. Korean Zombie, I think at one point in time, was the most exciting fighter in all of combat sports. I mean, he was like the original Justin Gaethje, just going out there, putting on fight of the years against Lena Garcia, getting the first twister ever in the UFC, 7-second knockout, dislocates his shoulder, pops it back into place, fight of the year, and into a Darce choke against Dustin Poirier, comes back after 2 years, gets a first round knockout, and then just one of the most exciting fighters on planet Earth. And Brian Ortega is that same way. Like, even his loss to Max, which is one-sided, it was just his he was too tough for his own good, and his body gave out and the doctor stopped it. So I don't think he's ever been in a bad fight. I actually think his fight against Moicano is one of the more underrated fights of the last few years in terms of action. And then of course he has that amazing knockout against Clay Guida and Frankie Edgar. I think he might have been one of the first fighters to stop Guida and Frankie Edgar, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, Korean Zombie did the same thing to Frankie Edgar, and then he had that amazing guillotine win over Cub Swanson. So both men have basically been circling each other, trying to, like, not unofficially, they've just been one-upping the next person over and over and over and over. And they are just high-octane fighters with just absurdly high level martial arts skills. And I think these two might not ever be champion. They might still have the skills to be champion, but I don't say pencil a fight in for fight of the year, fight of the night, But I'm going to pencil Brian Ortega versus the Korean Zombie in for fight of the night, if it happens, that is.
Wow. All right. So a little bit of positivity. And speaking of positivity, let's go to AK, because we have Brian Ortega, a man who's looking to bounce back from his first professional loss to Max Holloway nearly 2 years ago. If you watch his media scrum, he's a man with a different outlook on life, different outlook on the sport. He's made a lot of changes in lieu of this fight. Sure, there's a no contest mixed in, but he's finished all six. You could say he finished all seven of his UFC wins, taking on the Korean Zombie, who since he's returned from the mandatory military service, 3-1, three first round finishes. The one loss was that crazy one to Yair Rodriguez, where he was a second away from winning that fight. And as Dana White said, even Alexander Volkanovsky said, the winner will likely be next for a shot at the featherweight title. So when you combine these kinds of stakes with a high level matchup like this, the way Jose just described it, I mean, this is a recipe for a memorable main event, is it not?
We're talking about if there's any fight that could challenge Zhang and Wei Li and Joanna, or Zhang and Joanna for fight of the year, this is it. I know the award is pretty much sealed. That is one of the greatest fights I've ever seen. This fight has a storyline, stylistic matchup. Listen to their bonus accolades. Okay, I know UFC bonuses aren't the greatest gauge or anything, but I think they're a pretty solid indicator of how exciting these two guys are. Brian Ortega, his last four fights: fight of the night against Max Holloway, performance of the night for the knockout of Frankie Edgar, performance of the night and fight of the night for his fight with Cub Swanson, and then fight of the night with Hanato Moicano. Chan Sung Jung has fought eight times in the UFC and has eight total bonuses. He also doubled. There's one fight he didn't get a bonus for, but then he made up for that by doubling up in the Dustin Poirier fight, which is, again, almost a forgotten classic at this point, only because he's just had so many exciting fights. They say all the time that so-and-so has never had a boring, you know, they used to hype up like, oh, Diego Sanchez never had a boring fight and Clay Guida's never had a boring fight. And even in their primes, that wasn't true, that you could pick out like one or two fights. This is not hyperbole. If you just look at their resumes now, I don't know if Ortega or the Korean Zombie have ever been in a fight that was either not exciting or had a memorable finish. It's crazy. So this is as high level a matchup as you can get at featherweight. We said the same thing when Ortega fought for the title, fought Holloway. So that was one of the highest level championship contests we'd ever seen. This is about a non-championship. This is as high as it can get. This might be the most highly talented, highly skilled, non-title fight of the year. I say that obviously because it's coming out tomorrow. I'm sure if I think about it, someone will correct me, but it's up there. I mean, I don't know how much better you can get without it being a title fight. It's pretty incredible.
Let me follow up with you, AK, because we can all agree that this division with the talent on the roster, super, super deep. But I mean, just to kind of build on what you just said, outside of the title fight rematch between Volkanovski and Holloway, I mean, we haven't seen a fight featuring anybody in the top five at all in 2020. So this is huge all around. So I guess my question is, keeping the buildup, the anticipation, all these fun intangible things that we like to look at heading into these fights, is this the best featherweight fight of the year, even with the title fight that happened at UFC 251?
Yeah, it's got to be, right? It's got to be. And even if one of these guys goes on to fight Volkanovski, I don't think it'll be as highly anticipated as this match is. And again, and it's also a style thing, because I think Volkanovski is a great champion, but I think he's shown he has a little bit more of a methodical style that isn't always crowd pleasing. I think it's great, but it definitely isn't always crowd pleasing. These two, Ortega and Zombie, are just made for each other. I mean, yeah, you could say Zombie has the advantage on the feet. You could say Ortega has the advantage on the ground, but both guys have shown skills in both areas. Ortega has a ton of power on the feet. His standup is still a work in progress, you know, for a guy who's a grappling specialist, but he has power. I mean, he took Frankie Edgar's head off. You know, he finished Clay Guida. Clay Guida's not an easy guy to knock out. And Jung, I mean, yes, knockout's amazing, but I mentioned the Dustin Poirier fight. That when he beat Dustin Poirier by submission, that was like one of the most exciting things I'd ever seen. So very comfortable on the ground. The Twister, I totally didn't even mention the Twister. One of the, at the time, was the only Twister submission in UFC history. So you just couldn't have a better style matchup as far. And even if I'm sure people want to see an explosive finish, this one, if it goes five rounds, you know it's going to just be an insane five rounds. It's going to be like a classic five rounder. So I don't know how much more free PR we can do for the UFC. But people got to watch this one. This fight's just insane.
Jose, like we sort of alluded to, Brian Ortega has made some significant changes in his life. He's obviously had his issues in the past with USADA. The incident with Jay Park, although it was a huge story, bit of a head scratcher, but it seems like he's in a very good place. His focus, his mindset all seem to be on point here. And Jose, you've been a part of so many of these media day scrums at this point. And I could say from listening to fighters and doing so many interviews over the year, I've many times come out of conversations having a completely different outlook on a fight than I did heading into it after hearing some of these comments and conversations. So after the media day scrum with Ortega, do you feel like his comments during the media day, that sort of deep look he took inside himself, being in the moment the way that he was, has that changed your outlook on this fight at all?
A little bit. It basically makes me just wonder what Brian Ortega is going to show up. I mean, his words were like, I hope Abu Dhabi has good hospitals because we're both going to need it. So, you know, he's expecting just an all out bloodbath in there. But he said himself that he just had to burn a lot of bridges. It's very reminiscent of Makhwan Amerikani's media day scrum, like the very week before, like 1 week ago, when he pinpointed the exact moment he knew he had to make changes. And it was a very emotional press conference, and we saw he went three rounds with Edson Barbosa in a very entertaining fight. So I know Brian Ortega is going to be in a good fight regardless of what's going on in his life. But he said he found that love again for MMA. Like, he remembers when he used to fight for free, he used to fight for $50 or $100, and he loved it, but he just loved it. And then he just lost his way, and now he's refound that love of fighting. So I favored Kareem Zombie going into this fight, but I think it's much more, and I don't want to say Brian Ortega's words made it 50-50, but it just makes me wonder what type of fighter we're going to get from Brian Ortega. Like, is he going to be more methodical, come out with a game plan, and have better striking, and actually look for submissions and knockouts rather than just going out there and guns blazing with no game plan? So it raised more questions of his game plans more than anything. But I still slightly favor Korean Zombie in what should be still be an epic fight.
I was going to ask you if you can even emotionally make a pick for this fight, Jose.
Well, we're under the assumption that this fight is going to happen. I think we're all in agreement that the Korean Zombie will probably have the edge standing up. Brian Ortega's boxing is great. But it's not. This is MMA. You got to have everything well-rounded. And I just think Kareem Zombies is much more polished, especially with Eddie Cha in his corner, his longtime striking coach, who I think is one of the more underrated coaches in all of MMA, especially in the striking department. He's really turned a lot of fighters around, both in the lab and fight ready in Arizona. So the Kareem Zombie, I give the edge in the stand-up department. And of course, every fight starts standing. Brian Ortega and the Kareem Zombie are phenomenal on the ground. It's two of the absolute best. But Korean Zombie, like AK said, gets the twisters, the darce chokes, just these real unorthodox submissions, and they're mostly attacking style. Like when he got Dustin Poirier with the darce choke, it was off a flying knee. It was a flying knee into the fence into a darce choke, which honestly, like that's my favorite fight of all time. Like if I want to watch fights, I'll watch that fight just in general. It's my absolute favorite fight from beginning to end. And then Brian Ortega is much more reactionary when it comes to his submissions. Like he'll snatch up the neck or he'll snatch up a limb or something. Like he doesn't always look for the submission, but when the opening is there, he takes advantage of his opponent's mistake because he is so good. So if the Korean Zombie like makes a mistake early, especially when they're dry, and Brian Ortega snatches hold or a limb or a neck or something, it's going to be a rough night. In a straight-up jiu-jitsu competition, I'd obviously favor Brian Ortega, black belt in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and probably one of the better representatives of the grappling department, especially in the featherweight division. We've seen it a million times. You get two fighters with high-level grappling, it usually turns into a stand-up fight. Mm-hmm. Brian Ortega didn't really show much grappling or wrestling against Max Holloway, so I have to lean towards the Korean Zombie. I don't know if we'll get the finish. I just think his striking is better and he hits harder. And that's honestly what it comes down to.
AK, what is your pick?
You know, I'm leaning towards Ortega. I had the opportunity to speak extensively with Ortega go ahead of this fight. So maybe there's a little bit of a bias there as far as him just kind of saying all the right things, pushing all the right buttons and kind of following the right narrative that we want to see when a fighter is coming off their first loss. Because he does strike me as someone who needed that loss to learn a lot of things, put things in perspective, whatever cliches you want to throw out there, and that he'll become stronger after the loss. We learn more from our losses than our defeats, etc. But it could go either way. It's tough to say. So, you know, one of the things he talked about a lot was how just fundamentally, he knew like how flawed he was. You know, he was saying like, man, I finally realized I should probably, you know, fight a little bit defensively. You know, I can't just march forward and be that warrior and just brawl. And, but that style is what made him so successful. So you have to wonder if making any kind of adjustments once you reach this level, once you're at this level already, making those kind of adjustments can be scary. Maybe it takes you to the next level. Maybe you kind of lose that magic that, again, brought you to the dance and made you a world title contender. We don't know. I'm leaning towards it being a good thing. I think that that if you can make stage adjustments at this stage, then good on you. But until he steps in the cage, we don't know. We don't know how effective it will be. But he is saying all the right things. And so in that sense, I like what I'm hearing. I think we'll see a more focused, more, I don't know, say more technical, but maybe just a little more thoughtful, which I think is what you need to be when you're fighting someone like a Korean Zombie. And if it breaks down to a dogfight, then Ortega knows how to do that for sure. He does not shy away from those at all. And then it comes up a little bit more of a 50-50, but I don't know. I like Ortega's chances. I think he could submit Zombie. And when I say submit, I mean Zombie's not going to tap. I mean he's going to choke him unconscious. I think we're going to have to, like, you got to put this zombie in the dirt. I don't see him tapping out to anything.
Man, and Moshe had the air horns for that take, AK. That was fire, my man. There's a cliche, speaking of cliches, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, of course, but it also creates a little bit of mystery too, because we haven't seen Ortega in quite some time, nearly 2 years. So what has he done over these last 2 years? He's been recovering. Obviously, he's, you know, trying to improve himself. And I will say that Ortega's scrum did change my outlook a little bit. He seems to be in a great focused place. So that definitely weighs on my mind quite a bit. That said, it hasn't changed my pick overall. I'm still going with the Korean Zombie to get it done. How he does it, I'm not even going to try and guess. But I think Zombie gets it done in a, I'll say, a very spirited matchup at 145 pounds. It's going to be really good. I can't wait to see it. It's going to happen tomorrow.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Co-main event, big one for the women's flyweight division. Jessica Andrade enters 125 to face Caitlin Chookagian. Andrade, of course, the former women's strawweight champion. She may have found herself a path to another title shot if the dominoes fall into place here. That's my opinion, AK, especially with Cynthia Calvillo withdrawing from her fight with Lauren Murphy next weekend at UFC 254. If Jessica Andrade beats Caitlin Chookagian tomorrow night and does so at least somewhat impressively, is she next in line to fight the winner of Shevchenko and Maya?
Yeah, I mean, look, method matters. And if she picks up a big first round, second round knockout, just one of the, you know, some one hitter quitter, the kind of knockout that really only Jessica Andrade, maybe Amanda Nunes, just go think about the best female fighters in the UFC. There's very few that have that one strike knockout power. Holly Holm maybe on a good day, but we know Andrade does, and she's shown it at 115. I don't think it'll have that power. Will have much issues translating to 125. If anything, 125 really feels like the class maybe she should have been in all along. Despite the great success she had at 115, you know, we always say, like, we always encourage fighters, if they can avoid that weight cut and still kind of be a reasonable size for a certain weight class, then that's the weight class they should fight in. So I don't know if 115 is ruled out, but I think 125 is really good for her. And I think we'll see how good it is tomorrow against Chookagian. Again, especially if she gets that big win. And without hesitation, we can say that knockout gets her that shot against Shevchenko. I think it's a fight that when Andrade was the champion, you know, people thought, oh, that'd be a cool super fight one day. Well, it no longer has to be a super fight. We know there's not as many pieces that have to be moved around now. She really just has to get a highlight reel win against, or a convincing win against one opponent, And that this fight could happen, I mean, even before the end of the year. I doubt it, but I imagine Shevchenko would want to fight again at some point.
What do you think, Jose? I mean, Shevchenko's going to fight Maya next month.
Oh, I keep
kidding. That's all set up. Lauren Murphy is welcoming a newcomer. I did speak to Lauren yesterday. She said that if all goes well and according to plan, she wants to compete next Saturday, get a win, and then fight Calvillo before the year is over. So she wants to cement her place as one of the top contenders, if not the top contender, heading into 2021. But can Andrade sort of take all of this momentum away from the rest of this division if she gets a win tomorrow night?
I think it would really depend on how she wins. Like if we leave Saturday night or Sunday morning in where I am, it would really, if everyone is saying like, man, I would love to see Jessica Andrade fight Valentina Shevchenko, then of course that's a fight that we should make, especially with Lauren Murphy not fight Cynthia Calvillo. But if Lauren Murphy gets her wish, as she told you, and wins on Saturday, Sunday morning, and then fights Cynthia Calvillo, maybe on the same card as Valentina, if that's possible, maybe the December pay-per-view, then it has to be her. But stuff has to play out first, because it's just impossible to plan in 2020. Like I've said it, like I asked a lot of fighters, like, is it hard to even come up with a game plan in fight camp knowing you might go through 2-3 opponents before you even step into the octagon? So, hey, if Lauren Murphy wins impressively, I think she's done enough to get that title shot, considering she's actually been competing in this weight class. But if Andrade goes out there and does what she did to Rose or what she did to Carolina Kovalkiewicz, which I think a lot of people forget, that knockout is one of the greatest knockouts I've seen in a woman's fight, especially a strawweight. Like, we don't see a lot of one punch knockouts below 135, and that was just a destruction in Dallas. So if she pulls off something like that, which I don't think she will, because that's not who I'm picking to win. But if she does that to Kyla Chikagian, then yes, sign me up for her versus Valentina Shevchenko, because I think we're also all in agreement that Valentina will most likely be Jennifer Maya.
Of course, AK. Like Jose just touched on, this will not be an easy test against Caitlin Chookagian tomorrow night. She's 6-3 in the UFC. She does have the loss to Shevchenko earlier this year. The others were very close split decisions to Jessica Eye, one against Liz Carmouche, and the Carmouche one was at 135 pounds, which is way above where Caitlin fought in CFFC and throughout her regional days. Very tough customer, certainly has the style. She has a significant height advantage. I think it's like 8 inches. She's got a four to five inch reach advantage. So there's a lot to like here if you're playing the pony, so to speak, on Caitlin Chookagian. What sticks out to you when you look at this, the X's and O's of this co-main event, AK?
First, a minor correction, Mike. I believe she's at 7-3 in the UFC.
Well.
Okay.
That's it. That's all I wanted to say. That's it. I'll see you guys later.
Cool story, bro.
I'll see you guys later.
George Costanza.
That's what I'm here for. No, I don't want to sit too much on Jose's toes. I think when we do the picks, I think he's going to break this one down a little bit more. But I agree, while Andrade kind of has the name value, maybe a little bit more name value, and has the championship pedigree, of course, at 115, Chookagian has a lot of the characteristics that have foiled Andrade in the past. So if people want to look at, you know, the people that Andrade has lost to, it's very easy to draw parallels. So for sure, this is not by any means, we keep saying, oh, you know, Andrade's opportunity to get a title shot. It's so far that, you know, that's very much far from guaranteed. But that said, the one issue with Chookagian is she doesn't have the power, I think, the finishing ability of like a Rose Namajunas, or even Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I know Joanna is not really considered as much of a fight finisher either, but there's a certain snap and a power to her punches that there's an effectiveness there that I don't know if people see the same thing in Chookagian. So again, I won't dive too deeply into the pick, but I do think it's a more competitive fight than people think. But I am leaning towards Andrade, so I guess we can elaborate more on that when we get to our actual, you know, making our picks.
All right, Jose, let's make the picks. And by the way, AK was correct, 7-3 in the UFC. Forgot the Lauren Murphy fight at the beginning of her career.
Thank you,
George.
Appreciate it.
That's it for
thank
me.
Thank you, George.
Yeah.
Going on a high note.
Costanza, there you go. who do you like in this fight, Jose?
Callan Chookagian. I think she's just a pretty. She's not a spectacular. Like, she's not a spectacular fighter in terms when it comes to highlight reels, but she's just a solid overall technical fighter. And she has John Donahue in her corner, of course. So he's absolutely unbelievable. He's one of the like the best jujitsu. Like, if you want a jujitsu coach, like, doesn't get much better than that. She trains with the Mark Henry's team, so she's obviously, her stand up is on point. So. The work is there, like you said, the height advantage there. I think she said in the media day, the height differential between her and Andrade would be like if she fought John Jones. Like, that's the equivalent of it. Like, if she stood next to John Jones, that's what Andrade looks like standing next to her. And when I heard that, I'm like, God damn, like, that can't be that ridiculous, can it? And then they stare down, and you just see how long and like slender Callan Chookagian's limbs are, and then Andrade is just like a tank with muscles and no neck and everything. I'm like, oh, I think this is going to be a rough night for Jessica Andrade, especially because people just say, oh, just take Callan Chookagian down. You can mess her up there. That's what Valentina did, this and that. But Callan Chookagian is super tall. You got to get through her reach first. And she's actually pretty good on the ground. So I think it's going to be a long night for Andrade. I think it'll be similar to the Joanna fight, where Joanna just basically kept her a range for 5 rounds in Dallas and en route to a decision. She has the loss to Rose. She obviously beat Rose, but I think she was losing to Andrade was losing to Rose until she dropped her on her head. I think that's fair to say. And then all her other fights have just been to bigger fighters, longer fighters. So I just think everything going into this fight favors Callan Chookagian outside of the power. So if Andrade gets a hold of her and just grinds her into the ground, like just powers through her submission defense or just connects and unloads with a barrage of strikes, then she could win. I just don't see that happening. So I favor Callan Chookagian in this fight. I just think it's going to be a 3-round like decision win, which is fine because that's what Callan Chookagian does. I just think she's a step ahead of her in the 125-pound division.
AK, you're leaning Andrade. Why?
Man, is Andrade 5'1"? Is she billed at 5'1"?
Yep.
Are you guys seeing this? And Chookagian's 5'9"?
Yes.
That's what they're billed at.
Guys, I'm going to give you my analysis here. That's 8 inches of difference. yeah. So I'm going to give you a little pro... Some, you know, they say there's no place for analytics in MMA. There's a little analytics for you. Kate, 5'9" is 8 inches taller than 5'1". We can double check that math later. I see Jose is double checking the math on his calculator right now. I knew that Caitlin Chookagian is bigger, but like you guys said, until I saw them and then until I just looked at their respect, I did not think that Andrade was that short. I have to stick with my pick now. I mean, I don't have to, but I'm going to. I just like the danger element that that Andrade brings. And again, almost no female fighter outside of Amanda Nunes can bring in any weight class. I think Andrade is just so has such a level of explosiveness and ability to finish that no one can match. Now, again, is that something that she can implement against these long rangy fighters without them making a mistake like Namajunas might have done in their first fight? I don't know. You know, I agree. It is very difficult. Getting inside an opponent like Caitlin Chookagian is just, you know, again, like I said, oh, just for a takedown, single leg, whatever. Really hard. Really hard. And I think Andrade's gonna be really frustrated. I think you're gonna have to see how mature she's become as a fighter. Because that will be the test. This is a mental game. It's as much as it is a physical and skill set game. This is mental because she is gonna have a lot of times in the fight where just she will not be able to lay a hand on Chookagian, like literally will not be able to lay a hand on her. But if she can work through those moments and find the timing, I think she can find a finish. So I do think that this fight will not go the distance, and because I think that, and I have to go with Andrade because I think Andrade doesn't want to finish the fight. So I don't feel great about it, I'll tell you, but I'm gonna go stick with my Andrade pick.
Callan Chookagian has a 6-inch reach advantage too, those of you wondering, 62-68.
And then again, it's not even counting legs. Like, they don't do the leg reach thing. Like, I bet her leg reach is even more, right? Like, oh, man.
It's interesting because when you think of, like, a power puncher like Jessica Andrade, usually equated to if you can survive, weather the storm early, you can outlast someone like that. But we've seen Andrade sort of evolve over the years. Like, heading into, like, the Joanna Jędrzejczyk fight, we're like, all right, if Jędrzejczyk can just, like, get out of the first round or two, she should be able to pick her apart. But we saw in the Rose Namajunas fight that eventually she's a little more patient. If you give her an inch, she'll take it and she'll do devastating things with that because she hammered Rose Namajunas in that third round and really turned the tide there. So what I think will end up happening is I think Chookagian will be able to use her her reach, those advantages that she has with the height and all of that for a couple of rounds. But at some point in this 15 minutes of action, Andrade is going to get her hands on Caitlin Chookagian. It's going to happen. So can Caitlin Chookagian withstand that storm at the end of the fight? I think the third round is going to be super interesting, and it will determine everything. That being said, I think Chookagian can take it. I think she'll be able to. I think she will earn a decision, but man, is she going to have to fight for it down the stretch? That's what I think. But it's going to be a good fight. Main card fills out with Modestus Bukauskas versus Jimmy Crute. That's a good one, a 205. Big step up for the former Cage Warriors light heavyweight champion, Claudio Silva, and the James Krause. And then Thomas Almeida returns for the first time since UFC 220 when he lost to Rob Font in January 2018. He's going to fight Jonathan Martinez. Really solid main card. Some really interesting preliminary fights as well. A lot of under-the-radar options, Jose. So what sticks out to you, whether it be fighter or fight?
Obviously, Mateus Gamrot is joining the UFC this weekend. And man, I've been waiting for him to be in the UFC for quite a while. And the fact that his signing was overshadowed by Michael Chandler was a little disappointing for me. Not because I dislike Michael Chandler, because I just wanted to see the fanfare that maybe hardcore MMA fans would just shower him when they announced that signing. But then Michael Chandler signs not soon after, and Gamrot was quickly forgotten in the lightweight division. But my God, is the lightweight division so exciting right now? Obviously, Jillian Robertson's fighting, friend of the A side, trains with Shorty Torres and Dean Thomas. I think she's tied or broken the record for most submissions in women's MMA in the UFC. I think she either tied or broke Ronda Rousey's record. She just got her black belt from Dean Thomas, so she's been on cloud nine. She was very, very nervous for her media day, but she got through it. Poliana Botello is not concerned with her black belt, her new black belt, or her ground skills, because in her words, I dream of black belts every day, so it is what it is. So obviously the Jimmy Crute fight, you said, the Thomas Almeida fight. So all around, exciting fight all from top to bottom. Obviously the main event is unbelievable. I still think last week's was slightly better in terms of talent on the card, but you stick Mateus Gamrot on any card and Jose is going to watch. So that he would be, if I have to say one fighter to watch, it's going to be him, which means he's probably going to have a bad fight because I've cursed him, because this card is cursed.
I don't know if you cursed him or the fact that you used your name and talked about yourself in the third person may have cursed him, but it is what it is. You're an avatar.
But, it is what it is.
Yes. AK, what stands out to you in the under the radar department?
Guys, look, who is most likely to land a Joaquin Buckley leg caught Enziguri spinning kick KO? I'll tell you who it is. It's John Phillips. All right. John Phillips, I know anyone who's seen him fight in the UFC so far, probably not impressed, but he came in with a reputation as this like insane knockout artist. He has one in the UFC. It's like a sub 20-second knockout. So there's that. They can replan that on his highlight reel all they want. The rest of it is a lot of him getting taken down and submitted, which I hope Jeonyoung Park does not try to do, because Jeonyoung Park, he can grapple a little bit. So if he wants to be smart and he wants to try and win the fight, yes, he may want to mix in some takedowns and try and go for some Mr. John Phillips. But if he wants to be a hero, if he wants to be a man, you stand and bang with John Phillips. All right, you stand and bang, and you roll the dice, and maybe you pay the price. We don't know, but you just that's what I want to see. So, but top to bottom, honestly, I don't know any fight on this card that doesn't have potential to either be an exciting fight or end in an exciting finish. The only one that might drag a little bit with respect to these guys, Antigulov Grishin. I don't know. Now that I say that, it's probably going to end in like an amazing like 10-second flying knee KO. So to enjoy the jinx, guys, the reverse jinx. But otherwise, the other matchup I'm really looking forward to is Jamie Malarkey, Ferris Zion. I think is also going to be really good, really, really good back and forth fight. That one, I think, is fights that might go to decision. That might be the best one besides possibly the main event or Chookagian Andrade. And the other thing I want to ask is, why is Jillian Robertson not a bigger star?
I don't know.
Some trouble with the media. I mean, she has a good personality, but I get it. Not the smoothest, you know, media personality, but she finishes fights. She's one of the rising contenders at 125. She's Canadian, which everybody loves, for as I know. So I don't know. I hope that she has a stand up form. But Poliana Botello, a really tough fight. That's a coin toss fight for me, though. I don't think that's a showcase fight for Jillian Robertson at all. But I'm surprised. I'm surprised UFC hasn't given her more of a push.
Well, I mean, they matched her up with Macy Barber last year. Yeah, and that was kind of like
they did. That was more for Macy. Macy got all the hype, though. He's still going into that fight.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that kind of rub people the wrong way because everyone expected that to be a banger and Barbara ended up running through her. But Robertson's obviously doing much better. She's overcome that. She's breaking records now and she wants to break some more records along the way. So that's going to be a fun fight to watch. I think Gamrot's debut, as Jose talked about, in general, is under the radar, and him taking on Kutatalatse is certainly the definition of under the radar. And normally I would go a little bit deeper in the card with these, but I really like the Bukauskas-Krug fight, man, especially in the featured spot. I mean, it wasn't originally there because the Ciryl Gane fight was still there, but man, this is a good one for that spot now. I mean, Krug is a freaking powerhouse, and Bukauskas is a guy that I've been singing his praises for a couple of years now. Just great personality. He's just 26 years of age. The guy finishes fights. That's all he does. And clearly he's somebody the UFC sees something in to give him this kind of a step up in competition for just a second UFC fight. I was a little surprised at this booking, but I like it nonetheless. So I think this is the under the radar fight of the card and could deliver some good stuff, perhaps some bonus money. I don't know if we're going to get a Buckley KO out of it, but I think this will be a fun one, no doubt about
it. If he's a man, apparently, according to AK.
If he doesn't want
a
to
real
win the
man,
fight.
Whatever.
But that's a great piece of matchmaking, though, as they say in the business, Krug and Bukauskas. That is a great little morsel of matchmaking.
Hold on. As you say, as they say in the business, that's a great fight.
No, that's they say it's a great piece of matchmaking. It's a great morsel. It's a little. Little morsel of matchmaking for you to nibble on. You know what I mean? It's not the whole meal.
As they say in the business, that's a fight.
Yeah. Jose, you watch baseball. It's like when they go like this.
As they say
player.
In the business, that was a punch and a kick. What a weird thing.
I don't know if we can get much better than that. I think we have to Costanza our tookuses on out of here.
9.0, Mike, my gymnastics rating for this car since you asked. 9.0 is ceiling.
Okay, well, there you go. Now we can officially put a bow on this preview show here on MMAfighting.com. Of course, we are your one-stop shop for all things Fight Island and UFC Fight Island 6. Thanks to our guy, Jose, in Abu Dhabi. He is there. He'll have all the post-fight chats. We'll have results, storylines, post-fight coverage, etc. So we have you covered as always. Jose, get some sleep, my man. There you go.
Someday.
There you go. For Jose Youngs, for Alex Kaylee, the fiery Prince of Positivity, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.